We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam from the 4th canto, chapter 12, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead, text number 16. Atmastyapatya surido balam redakosham antapuram parivihara bhuvascharamya bhumandalam jagade mekalama kalaya kalupashishtam iti saprayayu visharam. Atma.
Atma.
Body. Sri.
Wives.
Apatya.
Apatya.
Children.
Children.
Suridaha.
Suridaha.
Friends.
Friends.
Balam.
Balam.
Influence.
Influence.
Army. Vidakosham. Rich treasury.
Rich treasury.
Antapuram.
Antapuram.
Female residential quarters.
Female residential quarters.
Parivihara-bhuva.
Parivihara-bhuva.
Pleasure grounds.
Pleasure grounds.
Cha.
Cha.
End.
End.
Ramyaha.
Ramyaha.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Bhumandala.
Bhumandala.
The complete earth.
The complete earth.
Jaladi.
Jaladi.
By oceans.
By oceans.
Mekalam.
Mekalam.
Bound.
Bound.
Akalaya.
Akalaya.
Considering.
Considering.
Kala.
Kala.
By time.
By time.
Upashristam.
Upashristam.
Created.
Created.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Prayayu.
Prayayu.
Went.
Went.
Vishalam.
Vishalam.
To Bhadarikashram.
To Bhadarikashram.
Translation. Thus Dhruva Maharaj at the end left this kingdom, which extended all over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas known as Bhadarikashram. Purport. In the beginning of his life, when he went to the forest in search of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhruva Maharaj realized that all bodily conceptions of pleasure are products of the illusory energy. In the very beginning, of course, he was after the kingdom of his father, and in order to get it, he went to search for the Supreme Lord. But he later realized that everything is the creation of this illusion energy. From the acts of Srila Dhruva Maharaj, we can understand that somehow or other, if one becomes Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter what his motivation is in the beginning. He will eventually realize the real truth by the grace of the Lord. In the beginning, Dhruva Maharaj was interested in the kingdom of his father, but later he became a great devotee. Mahabhagavat, and had no interest in material enjoyment. The perfection of life can be achieved only by devotees. Even if one completes only a minute percentage of devotional service and then falls down from his immature position, he's better than a person who fully engages in the fruitive activities of this material world. Chaksura Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Yena Bhuttare Svayam Rupa Kanamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhara Shambhasri Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in this verse, there's a reference to the illusory energy. the illusory energy or the domain of Maya is also energy of Krishna. Krishna is the origin of all energy, but Krishna is not personally involved with his material energy. Natasyikaryam karanam ca vidyate parasya shakti vividaya shruyate. Krishna is not preoccupied with controlling the material energy. That is not his business. Krishna is eternally in the spiritual sky, in his spiritual abode, performing his own pleasure potencies, his own pleasure activities. Krishna is deeply absorbed in his pastimes, with his devotees, in his abode, which is perfect. It is totally blissful. Everything there is just wonderful. Nothing is dry, nothing is dull, nothing is painful. Everything is simply purely made of the nature of Satsit Anand. It's eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. It is described that the material energy, also known as the illusory energy or Maya, is Asat. It is Asat. It is near Anant, and it is also Achit. In this abode of the material energy, everything is temporary. Nothing is eternal. Knowledge is covered. Avritam jnanaitena. Knowledge is covered. And due to the influence of lust, it is due to the influence of lust and hate that the living entities are deluded in this material energy. The living entities are the eternal parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Mamayavamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manasastra nindriyani prakriti sami kirsati. But the living entities are not free when they are in the material world. Freedom is not there. Rather, the living entities are always involved in struggle. Prakriti stani karsati. Struggle with prakriti. Struggle with the material energy. Struggle with the energy of Maya. There is no question that one can be free from struggle in this material world. It is not there. It is fundamentally designed for the living being to experience different types of misery. Adiatmika, Adibhautika, and Adidaivika, types of klesh, or sufferings for mind and body, sufferings from other living beings, and sufferings from the natural conditions which are controlled by the devas. So, if we thoroughly understand that this material world, known as the illusory energy, is illusory because it creates the impression that happiness can be experienced here. And it creates an image of permanence. We think it will last, but nothing will last. There is no love that lasts in this world. The material energy is described as asat, or temporary, as unreal, as sat means really truth, so as not truthful. The material energy is not real in the sense that it is temporary. A, it is not what it seems to be, and B, it is temporary. Therefore, nothing in this material world is ever constant. But because the changes are happening slowly, it doesn't look so different. It looks like things are the same. We come in the temple room, it looks the same. Of course, if we haven't been, there are changes, and there are differences. Now there are shilas on the altar, the flowers are reddish and purple, but different. different. Each time, differences. The differences come and go. Now we have this treasure chest for the donation box that wasn't there before. Like that, different attributes appear. So in the material world, changes are there, but the changes are some changes are very significant, and some changes are very minute. They are hardly noticeable, or not noticeable at all. And therefore the material energy creates an illusion of permanence, an illusion that things are staying constant. And we relate to it like that. We relate to familiar places. I know this place. I know it. I know the people, and therefore I know what to expect. I feel at home. That is the nature of the mind. But the reality is that there is no place to be known. The material world is not to be known. There's no question that there is any place which is ever the same. It's always changing, everything. Therefore we're not relating actually to the same thing. It's only in our mind that it's the same thing. In reality it's changed. We're not dealing with the same person, in the sense, not with the same body, not with the same mind. We may be dealing with the same spirit soul, because the spirit soul is spiritual. And therefore relationships with living beings are more relevant than relationships with material objects. Because material objects are always temporary. They break down. Our possessions, our clothes, our house, everything breaks down. But the living being itself is of an eternal nature, spiritual, spirit soul. And spirit is sat, it remains. So this sat and asat is difficult to understand. And therefore the various philosophers have for a long time been arguing about the material world being real or not real. The Vaishnava philosophy is that the material world is real in the sense that everything is genuinely manifest, but it is temporary, and therefore things are always changing, and therefore we cannot relate to anything permanently, and therefore in one sense what we think is permanent is also just illusion. Tejo varimadam yata vinimayo yata trisargam isadam nirastaku akam satyam param divahi. The eternal abode of Krishna is Satyaparam. That is the absolute truth. And that from Krishna, Janmadi, everything is manifesting is also a fact. So all the temporary manifestations are coming from Krishna. And therefore it is also Krishna's eternal energy. If we're really looking at the material world, then we see that the material world is sometimes existing and sometimes not existing. Because there is the day of Brahma and the night of Brahma, or the period that the material energy is manifest and the period that the material energy enters into the body of Mahavishnu. So in this way we are dealing with the asat world. The soul is sat-sit-anant, eternal. And therefore the soul cannot have any satisfying relationship with anything that is asat, or achit, or nirana. It's not possible. It is fundamentally impossible. So we cannot have any happy relationship with anything material. Not with any body. Not with our own body, nor with the body of others. Can we have any lasting relationship of happiness? It is not possible. Our own body cannot give happiness, not anything durable, nor can give any other body can give happiness. So the happiness that we are experiencing at the present is very limited and faulty, and there is no question that we can ever find fulfillment in the material world. So the transcendentalist is aware of this, and therefore has no interest in the material world. There are different types of transcendentalists. The impersonalist is understanding this thoroughly and intellectually, and therefore the impersonalist will leave the material energy behind. But the impersonalist is not experiencing any spiritual variegatedness. Therefore, his spiritual realization is in principle the relief from material suffering. But the personalist is experiencing spiritual variegatedness. And with spiritual objects, one can have eternal relationships. And with spiritual personalities and spiritual bodies, one can actually derive great pleasure, which is lasting and fulfilling. And therefore, the personalist can actually, in his spiritual relationship, find fulfillment. Dhruva Maharaj, due to the purification, had become such a devotee. So it is interesting how Dhruva Maharaj at one point was a person who was interested in material happiness, and then he changed by a process. The process was actually chanting a mantra. By the strength of his mantra, Dhruva transformed and became a great transcendental personality. Along with the chanting of his mantra, Dhruva was also living a life of renunciation. Dhruva was living a life of austerity. Dhruva was living a life of giving up the material world in order to help the process of self-realization. Dhruva underwent severe fasts and so on. But the main contributing factor to his becoming a transcendentalist was the chanting of the name of the Supreme Lord. Because particularly that chanting of the name of the Lord is the process by which one can most effectively realize the eternal spiritual variegatedness. And that is our aim and our goal. It sounds all quite serious and philosophical. And it is, and philosophy may appear to be dry. But this philosophy is not dry. This philosophy, rather, is full of taste, because the spiritual world which is being referred to is now only described in philosophical terms, but that spiritual world is actually full of unlimited variety and full of transcendental opulence. It is of the nature of the chit potency, and it is directly manifesting the glorious nature of Krishna. The glorious nature of Krishna is Sadaisvarya Purna. Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yasasasriya Jnanavairagyus Chaiva Sanambhagami Tinganam. That Krishna is containing all beauty, all wealth, all strength, all knowledge, all wisdom, all renunciation. Krishna is, and all fame. Krishna is the... Therefore, the entire spiritual world is of the same nature. It is also unlimitedly beautiful and unlimitedly satisfying, and the strength in the spiritual world is not limited. The dimensions are not limited. And Srila Yamuna Acharya is pointing out that in this world everything is limited by time, space, and thought. And that in the spiritual world, the dimensions of space are not governed by the same limitations as here in the spiritual world, as here in the material world. Like, if we want to go from point A to point B, we cannot do that without being limited by certain laws. We have to travel. We have to travel. We cannot instantaneously go from one place to another. But we see that in the spiritual world, either in Golok Vrindavan or in Boma Vrindavan, Krishna is not bound by dimensions of space. And therefore, if we are in the holy dham of Vrindavan, and we are looking at the places where Krishna performed his pastimes, we see that they are spread out over a huge area. And then considering that Krishna was walking there with his cowherd boy friends, and when we go on parikramas and we go by car, then we find already that the journey is quite austere and tiresome to just drive by car from one area to another. It's quite exhausting. Yeah? And Krishna was walking. How was he walking? How was he leaving in the morning, going to these remote places and returning at night? It is inconceivable. Various explanations have been offered. It has been offered that the dimensions in the dham are not fixed, that the dham is like a lotus which is opening and closing at different times, and therefore the distances are changing, that is mentioned. But also we can simply understand that Krishna is not bound. He's not bound to travel. When Krishna desires to arrive in a certain place, he just arrives. So Krishna can depart, and the departure can take quite some time. And the entire arrangement has nothing to do with logic. Krishna is surrounded by unlimited cowherd boys and unlimited cows, and no traffic jams. No traffic jams, as they are all streaming out of their houses and are coming on the path. And the path is not a four-lane highway. It is not a four-lane highway. In the morning, we see people come out of their houses, they go to work, they enter into the four-lane highway, and it gets totally jammed. Totally jammed. Yeah. But in Vrindavan, there are many, many more cowherd boys leaving their homes than here. People are leaving their homes to go to work. And each of these cowherd boys have many calves to take care of. And all these calves and cowherd boys, they enter onto the road to the forest. And it's just a narrow path. Not so narrow, but certainly not a four-lane highway. And yet, no problem at all. It is all possible. So logic here will not apply, because the spiritual realm is not at all limited by time, place, and thought. And Krishna is not, therefore, his pastimes are not limited by dimensions. And therefore, the logic that a certain number of cows, a certain number of cowherd boys, a certain number of calves will not fit on a road of a certain width, all these kind of calculations are only applying in the material world. In the spiritual world, it all fits perfectly. There is no difficulty. And to cover one distance, yes, the distances are different. The amount of time to cross them is not fixed and simply depends on the desire of Krishna and his devotees. If they want to play on the way may be very long. If they want to arrive, the way may be very short. If they want to spend some extra time with their parents, then the beginning of the road may last a long time. In this way, all the dimensions and in the spiritual world are not governed by the same laws of time, space and thought. Krishna is taking breakfast at home, huge breakfast. Then Krishna is taking again breakfast in the house of other residents of Vrindavan. And the time is not changing. It is just breakfast time. And it's not that if we would do so, number one, the whole day would just be gone in taking breakfast. But in the case of Krishna, no. No problem. It just, time is not affected by this. So he's still in time to leave for the forest early in the morning. So that still the whole day is there to perform all the transcendental pastimes in the forest. Because the pastimes of Krishna are of a transcendental nature and not limited by time, space and thought. So therefore it is very difficult to logically understand Krishna. Krishna can break any law because Krishna is not at all bound by the laws that we know. So when Krishna comes and performs his pastimes, he is constantly defying the laws of nature. Constantly. We see how when the sons of Krishna find a lizard in a well, that, and they try to take this lizard out, which is very difficult because the well is deep and the lizard was big. Then Krishna did it very simple by extending his arm. Suddenly his arm became very long and he just grabbed that that lizard and brought him out of the well. We also see descriptions where Srila Sanatana Goswami is describing that Krishna, while dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, was reaching out to the gopis and extended his arm. And although he was high on the hoods of Kaliya, and they were standing on the bank of the river, still somehow or other, when he extended his arm, he was able to grab their hand. Although logically speaking, his hand should have become, well, let's estimate, maybe 25, 30 meters long, a rubber hand, nothing like that. Krishna just stretched out his hand at a distance and just grabbed the hand of the gopis, and that worked fine. That worked fine. They just stepped right onto the hoods of the serpent. So, how Krishna deals with dimensions and is of a totally different nature than what we know of the material world. How Krishna deals with time and distance is simply governed by his desire. Here, in the material world, time is governed by sequence. We experience a sequence of events. Yesterday, today, morning, early morning, later in the morning, noon. We see all these, and we know. We have a watch, and we can calculate. Or one can calculate by Vedic measurements. And as we are having 24 hours in a day and a night, in the Vedic measurement, one has 30 muhurtas in a day and a night. So one can measure. And in Bhagavatam there is a chapter. It's measuring time by the atom. There is a system by which time can be measured. One can see when the sun shines in, one sees little particles, one can see. One can see a particle, and by that particle one can calculate. Fine, we can make calculations of time. In the spiritual world, it is said that time is not existing in the same way. But yet, Krishna is performing his Astakaliya Leela. He is performing his transcendental Leela and his pastimes. And there is morning, and there are pastimes at noon, there are pastimes in the evening, pastimes in the night, and so on. And in the spiritual world, it also seems to be morning, noon, night, and so on. But all these things are governed not by the law of time, not by kala. Kala, the law of time, is simply governing the material energy. But in the spiritual sky, it is simply covered, it is simply controlled by the desire of Krishna, which may then manifest in the form of Yoga Maya. And Yoga Maya is then, on behalf of Krishna, arranging these things. That different times and different places and different pastimes are happening. And apparently are happening in a sequence and apparently have a beginning and an end. But all such things are not governed by the law of time, because the events that are taking place, they are not limited by time. When Krishna dances one night with the gopis in the rasa dance, then somehow or other that night becomes as long as an entire day of Brahma, or a night of Brahma, right? Same day and night, anyway. As in a sahasra yuga paryantam, or a period of 1,000 mahayugas. Right? So that's like a very long period of time, and yet it was one night. Because the dimensions of time have completely changed. So the asat is governed by the law of natures. And these laws of nature are to some extent known to us. And by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we get more knowledge about the essential principles of the material and spiritual nature. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Jnanitaham sadhigyanam idam vaksyami asi sataha yat gyatvaneya bhuvanyat gyataram avasishyate. Which means that now I will provide knowledge of the material realm as well as of the nominus, of the cause. Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan is also explaining that in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is dealing particularly with knowledge of the material world and of the nature of the soul. Or in other words, of jiva and prakriti. Yeah. And in the seventh chapter, begin the six middle chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, where the description is specifically given of the nature of the Supreme Lord, Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan explains. So, both are required. Jnanantaham savijnanam. One needs both. We need knowledge of the material world, knowledge of the eternal nature of the soul, and we need knowledge of the Supreme Lord. If we have knowledge of the Supreme Lord, and knowledge of the position of the soul, and knowledge of the nature, of the temporary nature of the material energy, then we have full knowledge. Then we are actually understanding the full nature of spirit, because ultimately, even matter is also spirit. Parashashakti vividaya suyate is also Krishna's energy. Mama maya durachaya. But this maya, this illusory energy of mine, is difficult to overcome. One is seeing things that are not there. That is the nature of this illusory energy. One is seeing happiness which is not there. And that is the problem. We look in this world and we think there is happiness which is not there. So, but in the spiritual world, the happiness is factual and is real, and therefore we focus on Krishna and his eternal spiritual abode, and we realize that this is actually the reality. And therefore one must understand that as long as we are relating to the material energy, we have no shatter. We are like a ball which is floating on the waves of an ocean and is just being thrown about by the waves and the wind, sometimes going in one direction, sometimes going in the other direction, just like a ball being thrown around, tossed around on the waves. That is our existence in the material world. When we come to the spiritual platform, there also is an ocean, but this is a different ocean. It is not an ocean full of suffering, but it is an ocean of ecstasy. So in the spiritual world we are being tossed about on the waves of ecstasy. This is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, how we are entering into Bhakti Ras. This Bhakti Ras is the essence, it is the taste that is experienced in the relationship with Krishna. Simply, so when we are a ball on the ocean, we have no shelter, no shelter. So like this, people are in this world and they have no shelter. And they look for some shelter. And they think they found it for a while. Some friends. Okay, I'll stay here with these friends. Because they are kind to me. They give me some shelter. This world is harsh. And my kind friends are giving me some shelter. But then after some time, we find that the kindness is still not enough. Because we see that there is also another side to it. Some corruption is also there. Maybe they smoke, maybe they drink, maybe sex, maybe this, maybe that. And ultimately, their kindness is not enough to save us from suffering. Then we move on and we look for a new shelter. Maybe new people, maybe a new group. Somewhere again, shelter. Maybe look for shelter in purchasing things, buying things. Maybe look for shelter in possessing many, many things, nice things. They give us shelter. Fill up a whole house with things that are nice and get the nice vibrations. I walk in this nice room, see all these nice things. I feel nice. I get shelter from all of them. But all this shelter, it doesn't fully work. It doesn't really, it's not really enough. It's not really a shelter. In this way, a ball thrown and tossed about on the waves. So we are. But in the spiritual relationship, we find shelter with Krishna. So we constantly seek shelter. We cannot ever think that we are a devotee. We are not a devotee. We are one who seeks shelter. That is the difference. When you think, I'm a devotee, then we begin to think that we have qualities, that we have attributes. But when we think, I have no attributes. I have no attributes. I'm simply looking for shelter. I'm one who seeks shelter in Krishna, always. So when we again look for shelter in Krishna every moment, then we are safe. Then we are on the trend, then we are with Krishna. Only then. And real shelter in Krishna is not only to accept Krishna as our protector, but shelter in Krishna is that we are his servant. That we simply try and serve him. There is shelter in service to Krishna. Not just in turning to Krishna as our protector, but in using whatever we have, whatever we can, in the service of Krishna. There is actual shelter. So we should not forget this, that we are asrita, shelter seeking. And in the asat, in the illusory world, in the world of Maya, we will not find shelter. But we think we will. We think we will. I think I will find it in another country where the weather is better. Let me go Let me go. I think I will find it in a relationship, someone to love. I think I will find it there. Maybe one day. Maybe. Maybe one day that will come. Maybe. Who knows? You don't know. You cannot know what can happen. It can happen. Who says it cannot? Anything can happen. Therefore, let's be optimistic. Maybe it will happen, that relationship where I will find shelter. It will not. It doesn't exist. Some sort of shelter, but not satisfactory shelter. So in this world, we accept, even devotees accept shelter in the material world. But that kind of shelter is not perfect shelter. It is not shelter that can give us fulfillment, but it can protect us a little bit. It's cold. We need a warm place. It's lonely. We need some people. There are many things like this. Right? It's harsh. We need some pleasant sounds, some pleasant forms, some pleasant colors. To please the mind. All right, we have all that. But it's not enough. It does something. Yeah. I mean, if we would be in a room where everything is painted in bright greens, blues and reds that are fluorescent, right? And all in wild patterns all over the walls and the ceiling, and including the floor. You get dizzy as soon as you walk in the room. And you go, God, intense, right? And if you make a room with all little blocks, white and black, and you take it up to the walls and up to the ceilings and all the way around, it's super intense, right? Take me out. So we need shelter, material shelter. But although the material shelter can give us some experience of either goodness, passion, or ignorance, it cannot give us an experience of fulfillment. But shelter at the feet of Krishna, that can give us shelter. The material shelter is like having a little boat. Better than being tossed by the waves, let's have a little boat. Oh yes, I'm so happy now that I sit in my little boat, that I'm no longer in the water. I'm so lucky. I was in the water, but somehow or other now I've got this little boat on this ocean, a little lifeboat. And there is even something to eat in there. I'm so happy now. That I got out of the water and that I got into this lifeboat. Somehow or other, how happy. But we're still on the ocean. So in this way, material shelter is like a boat, but not good enough. But shelter at the feet of Krishna is different. Shelter in service to Krishna, that is where it begins. If we simply take shelter in Krishna for protection, and if we simply accept that Krishna is the worshipable personality, that is nice. But then we are not yet tasting the rasa, not very much. Just taking shelter in Krishna as the supreme lord, the source of everything that is there, as our ultimate protector, as the controller, and so on, is not yet giving us much taste. But if we take shelter in Krishna by serving Krishna, then in the service comes the taste. And the more we just give all our energy in that service, the more our taste increases. And then, of course, then we enter into the realm of rasa tattva, which is again another level of discussion. There are five principal rasas, accompanied by seven secondary rasas. And within these five principal rasas, each and single one of them, whether it is conjugal, parental, friendship, servitorship, or neutrality, each of them is satisfying to the soul. And yet, it is said that no happiness is experienced by any devotee as is experienced by the gopis of Vrindavan. They are experiencing the topmost level of happiness because their service is the most complete. They give everything and anything without considering, without any social consideration or whatsoever. They'll give anything for the pleasure of the Lord. So in this way, their service is the most complete. And therefore, Gopi Bhartapada Kamalaya Dasana Dasana Das. Therefore, we are following in the footsteps of these gopis of Vrindavan, trying to offer anything and everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Now, because we are not so elevated according to regulative principles, later, as the heart becomes purified in a more spontaneous way, later, even in ecstasy, still later, in pure love for Krishna. And as our service to Krishna is increasing in quantity and quality, in depth, as our service is increasing in depth, Krishna will become purchased by us. And then Krishna cannot avoid to reveal himself. Just as when Krishna left the rasa dance, he was hiding from the gopis successfully in the form of Narayan. He had just taken two extra arms, and the gopis saw Narayan and said, "My dear Lord Narayan, please accept our humble obeisances. Can we ask a benediction? Have you seen Krishna? Please tell us where he is." But when Narayan, Krishna in the form of Narayan, appeared before Srimati Radharani, Krishna became purchased by her service and had to reveal again his original form with two arms. So in this pastime we can understand that this is the nature. As we offer everything to Krishna, Krishna becomes purchased by the service of the devotee. Then Krishna will reveal himself. And upon seeing Krishna, what else is there to see? Then, like Dhruva Maharaj, one will say, "Everything I ever desired before is like broken pieces of glass, no meaning. And now I receive diamonds. I wanted broken glass, but I got diamonds. This is the nature. Little glittering glass. But we will get diamonds." In this way, Dhruva Maharaj had no interest in the material energy, but only in Krishna, because he knew fulfillment is only there. Now maybe some questions or comments.
You speak about these high achievements later.
In Rasa Tattva.
But I'm just curious here in Iskcon, who can offer such guidance? It seems that nobody even desires to do that, because Prabhupada said it is not necessary to even speak about it.
Who can offer the guidance?
Yeah,
I understand. Who can offer guidance in the progression on the Raganuga path, on the path of spontaneous devotional service, where one is first of all becoming fixed in the service of Krishna and Nista, and then begins to experience ruchi, great transcendental taste, and then develops deep attachment to Krishna, and begins to develop bhava, and begins to develop his brain subsequently. So, in different writings, we find mention how one begins to develop the inclination to serve Krishna according to a particular rasa. In Srila Prabhupada once mentioned that there are five types of ashakti according to the nature, or five types of attachment to Krishna according to the five principal rasas. And that at that stage one desires to experience, to serve Krishna in a particular mood. And at that stage one begins to develop the mood of one of the principal associates of Krishna, one of the ragatmika bhaktas, those who are always absorbed in deep attachment to Krishna, such as the gopis or Nanda and Yasoda, or the cowherd boys, or Raktak, the servants of Krishna, and so on, or the trees in Vrindavan. And one begins to develop a particular transcendental mood and mellow. Sometimes it is stated that particularly bhava is the domain of ras, and that ras will really develop there. So wherever, others have mentioned that in ruchi some element begins, others have even said maybe at nista it begins. So what do we do when we are beginning to become attracted to, really spontaneously attracted to serve Krishna in a particular manner, according to one of the five principal rasas? Where do we go for guidance? Is it required? If we read in books of, particularly Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur deals with the topic, in Jayavadana, in Harinam Chintamani, in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, we find that he is particularly describing the guidance, that there is guidance. He describes how there are gurus who help devotees to go further in these advanced stages of developing one's relationship with Krishna. And then even speaks about Siddha Pranali, which is a process by which one is initiated in knowing his eternal identity. And then one can enter into Antaranga Seva, into Seva according to the internal reality, the eternal spiritual world. One knows then what is the nature of one's spiritual body and so on, and this can be revealed. Also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we're seeing references that Swarup Damodar Goswami was guiding on the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was giving guidance to Raghunath Das Goswami, who then under his direction also engaged in Antaranga Seva. So within our movement, how can this guidance in Antaranga Seva take place? Questions may be raised. Is it required to actually undergo Siddha Pranali or not? These questions have been discussed many times, and there are different opinions presented in the matter. Simple verses are quoted, yasya deva para bhakti, where it is said, prakashante mahatmanaha, simply by taking shelter and worshipping Guru and Krishna, all the imports of Vedic literature are automatically revealed. It is also stated that within the chanting of the holy name, that nothing is lacking. And it is stated that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi, Madhya Lila 15108, for example, that the chanting of Hare Krishna is not dependent on any other process of initiation, right? But rather that through the chanting, anything can be attained, the topmost levels of praying. Therefore, in the discussion on this matter, whether there is a need for guidance, and to what extent that guidance should be there, right? A specific guidance to go to the transformation of becoming one of the confidential servitors of the Lord who serves according to an eternal spiritual identity. Whether there is guidance needed to lead one into this other identity, or whether it is coming automatically in the process of devotional service. A case can be made for either. And therefore, generally, we leave it open. And generally speaking, we think that in the case of the ghosty Anandi, who particularly takes shelter of Kirtana, there is no doubt that the name alone can reveal anything. Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila will all be revealed within the name. Nama, Rupa, Charitadi, all this will be revealed. So in that sense, on the other hand, Krishna may arrange for the guidance when a devotee is eligible. He may arrange, because especially now already everything in our life is going on by the arrangement of Krishna. What to speak when one comes to the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti? Then Krishna will arrange. Krishna will arrange. Some people say Krishna has arranged. Okay? He has already arranged. There are already devotees sent by Krishna. Why don't you accept them? If one hears the calling, right, then one may answer to it. But we should not be in anxiety. Are we lacking teachers who can give us that essential guidance to enter into Raghunuga Bhakti? Or not? We need not worry. Everything is there. In the name, in the process, in this movement, nothing is lacking. It's complete. And everything will automatically awaken within the heart. Ichchasiddha Krishna Bhayam Sadhu Kabinai Sravana Visuddha Chitta Karyoda. It will awaken in the heart. And whether that is under the guidance of the Vaishnava, as you find in Jiva Dharma, and as you find in Harinam Chintamani or Sri Chaitanya Shikshambhita, or whether it is automatic. That we will see.
I'm not sure if I understood well. You said about time in the spiritual world, it does not exist.
Sorry, it is? Time in the spiritual world, and then?
The time in the spiritual world does not exist. Because I read in Prabhupada that
I said it existed. I didn't say it existed, but time in the same manner as it is existing here in the form of kala, and is governed by the law of sequence and event and measurable and so on. That doesn't exist. That is absent. And
I read that actually there is past, present, future, but it does not have influence.
Yeah. Well, there is, you see, I mean, I explained it. It is there, because I said the Astakalya Lila is there. So it starts in there's morning, there's noon, there's night. But it's not bound by the laws of sequence. And here time is bound by the law of sequence. Right? The end cannot come before the beginning. It's not possible. Right? It's just not possible. Right? It's like, it's morning, and the morning comes first, and then there's evening in this world. It's like that. In the spiritual world, it's not like that. Okay? The fact that morning comes first and evening comes later in the spiritual world is not at all bound by the law of time. Okay? As far as time, morning could come, evening could come first and morning could come later. The reason why morning comes first, it's all due to rasa. Okay? The spiritual world, the only law is rasa. And Yogamaya is the agent who is churning these ingredients of sequence for the same, for the, you know, of the Astikalya Lila, the pastimes throughout the day, for the sake of rasa. Yeah. But it's not bound by any law or anything like that. And it could happen, just for the sake of rasa, that one day the evening is first. Yeah. And then, yeah, so, or that past, present, future, that the future is first and the past comes later. All that is possible, because the laws are not bound. Okay.
Can you say that different devotees have also different experiences of the time? For example, if the intimate person of Krishna takes too long, one night, then Madhavasura will be very too long also.
Yeah, there may be different experiences also, according to the bhava of the devotee. Yeah. You see, for Mother Yasoda, the time, if she's a separation of Krishna, it takes much longer. It takes much, much longer. Yeah. The ones who are with Krishna find that the time is very short. The ones who are in separation of Krishna find it that it's very, very long. Very long. Yugyayitam nivisena. A moment appears to be like 12 years or more. So, a moment appears to be eternity, a moment of separation from Krishna. Yeah, so, here we are bound by material laws, like time is an all-pervading law. But the spiritual world, rasa, is the all-pervading governing principle. And here, it's time. Another question. A couple of questions.
Well, I would like to ask you about Brahma Samhita. I read some, not reputations, but rejections, I would say. Some others from the
Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Yeah. They say it was written by some Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the 17th century. Yeah. I would like to ask you, how you could defend, is there a way to defend the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Well, of course, on the basis of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the testimony of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are accepting that the Brahma Samhita was found by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that fifth chapter in the Adi Kesha temple while he was in South India. That's one point. As far as evidence that the Brahma Samhita, to which particular Vedic literature it belongs. Of course, Samhitas, for those who are not aware, are supposed to be part of the original Chaturveda, of the original four Vedas. These four Vedas are divided up in many different, well, in all kinds of scriptures that have different names, and Samhitas are part of the original Vedic literature. So, the problem is that according to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Krishna Samhita, only 6% of the Vedic literature is available today. Yeah? Yeah. So, it looks like the Brahma Samhita belongs somewhere in the 94%, which is like not available today. So it may be difficult for us. There's only the fifth chapter left of the Brahma Samhita. We don't have the rest. So this is the problem with Vedic literature, that not we still know the number of Vedic literatures, but I don't think we even have summaries of the contents of all the Vedic literatures. Yeah. I think there's just a lot of information that is just totally lost in this age of Kali. And 6% is not very much, so therefore, ultimately we can argue and argue and argue. And there are some arguments amongst the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. There are some websites published by the Tattvavadis who are not agreeing with us. Although they attack ISKCON. They don't, it is a little immature, the attack, because they are not dealing with ISKCON as representing the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and therefore they are not, their debate is not with ISKCON, their debate is with Jiva Goswami and with Baladev Vijayabhusan and with all the stalwart acharyas, and let them argue with them. That will be more difficult. So, I guess when we enter into debates with the other sampradayas, we first of all, we don't focus the discussion so much on such a detail. Right? Although it's ambiguous, granted, but we have our evidence from Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you accept it as bona fide. And if not, let's go to Srimad Bhagavatam. Because after all, Bhagavatam is the basis of Chaitanya Charitamrita, is the basis of the authority of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it's enough that he found the Brahma Samhita in South India. Therefore, let us go to Bhagavatam and look at the authority of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, if you don't accept the Bhagavatam as evidence, well, let's go to the Sandarbhas, and let's argue with Jiva Goswami. And after you've defeated Jiva Goswami, then please come back and talk to me again. But no one can defeat Jiva Goswami. His arguments are very, very solid and very well underbuilt. So in this way, I think the discussion is really there on A, the authority of Bhagavatam, which establishes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord, which establishes the authority of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's where I would lead the discussion.
Can we say that there are many galokas, like Krishna is in one place having breakfast and another galoka is Rasmita Brahman and other places playing with it?
Okay, can there be many galokas, like a multi-dimensional experience of past times, where different things are going on simultaneously? Well, Krishna can appear simultaneous in different forms, that he can do. And therefore, there is one Goloka, not many Golokas, but within that one Goloka, Krishna can manifest himself to different devotees simultaneously, if he so desires. So that Krishna is showing in his pastimes that he may take more than one form at different points in time. But generally speaking, it's not required So it's not like a main ingredient that Krishna is performing all these different pastimes with different devotees simultaneously by expanding himself. He has a cowherd pastime with the cowherd boys, and simultaneously somewhere else a gopi pastime with the gopis, and so on. It is not required like that, because the fact that Krishna manifests himself in one form, although he can show many, is adequate for rasa. So it would not really enhance rasa. So since it doesn't enhance rasa so much, there's not really a requirement for it, although it's possible, and it may sometimes occur. But generally speaking, there's one Krishna, and when he's not present with Mother Yasoda, then she is experiencing viraha bhava, or the separation, and then Krishna is playing with the cowherd boys who are in ecstasy, and when Krishna is at night in the forest meeting with the gopis, the cowherd boys are in separation, and so on. So the fact that Krishna is not there at for different devotees at different points in time is only favorable to rasa, because vipralamba, or separation, is considered